Welcome in, sleepers, and we are back on beat today with a very special guest. I have Gil Manzano, who is a beat writer for the Los Angeles Chargers. Gil, welcome to the show, man. This is actually kind of a privilege for us, and I'll explain to these guys a little bit what this is all about. But, I mean, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing well. I know we were chatting a little earlier about we were confused. We were talking about coronavirus or the weather because you mentioned hotspot. But where I'm at, I guess it's bad both ways. It's a little hot out here, and the pandemic is still going on in LA, roughly. But we're getting through, getting by, and hopefully I'll be able to practice pretty soon for the Chargers.
Yeah, that'll definitely be good, man. Hopefully we get a lot of this stuff behind us, and you know we'll talk about some of this a little bit later because obviously this is, I'm sure, changed course for all of you guys in general across the NFL. But for those of you out there that aren't familiar with On Beat, it's a segment with Sleeper Wire. It's where we have the pleasure of, you know, speaking with different beat writers from around the NFL. So before we dive into everything, Gil, let's just, where can everybody find you on social media and see what you have going on and what you're seeing with the team?
Yeah, first of all, follow me on Twitter. That's where I do most of my reporting. That's how it is nowadays. So at GManzano24. Or you want to find all my stories, we have a good amount of websites for the Southern California News Group, but the biggest ones are the Los Angeles Daily News website and the Orange County Register website. But we have a chain of 11 newspapers, so it's a little confusing, but you go to LA Daily News or Orange County Register, you'll find it there.
Nice. Very nice. Then myself, you guys can find me on Twitter at SPAC21. That's SSPAC21. So, Gil, just real quick, what became your path to becoming a beat writer?
Yeah, you know, I guess for me, you know, I I don't want to say start from the bottom like I'm Drake or something, but I had to work my way up. Let's go with that. I covered high school sports, did it for about 3 years after college. And then, I love covering high school sports and getting to know people and the kids, and they all have a dream and they all come from different backgrounds. So it's very cool. But, after 3 years, you got to make a move and work your way up. So I took a job at NFL.com in Culver City, kind of the headquarters there. And it wasn't really a writing job or a reporter job, but it was kind of a desk job. I was a breaking news editor. And I'm glad I took the chance there and kind of went into an office because, as you know, the NFL lifestyle is fast paced. All this news is coming out. Like I mentioned on Twitter, it comes out cranking. So I learned a lot from breaking news at NFL.com. And it kind of from there, it took off. I kind of, was known as the guy with NFL experience now. I wanted to go back out, on the scene. I wanted to get out from the office. So I left NFL.com and went to Las Vegas Review Journal, the newspaper out there in Las Vegas. And I was kind of a general assignment sports editor. And again, I had to work my way up. I cover everything because Las Vegas has a bunch of sports there from boxing to UFC, to the curling championships, gymnastics, dodgeball, you name it. Vegas has a convention for everything. So I did that. But then the Raiders moved to Vegas and, having some experience with NFL.com, like, hey, Gil, let's get you on the Raiders for a little bit. It was kind of hard because I was going back and forth from Oakland and Vegas, but, that's where I kind of got my feet wet as a beat writer. And me being from Los Angeles, there was an opening for the Raiders to cover with the Orange County Register. I'm sorry, the Chargers. Chargers moving from San Diego to LA and me being back home. It was kind of a great opportunity to be a full-time beat writer and cover the Chargers. Sorry for the long answer, but that's kind of how I got to the road here with the Chargers.
No, but that's cool, and I love that answer. I mean, you definitely got a lot of interesting experience. I mean, I'm sure the key one was with NFL.com, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's where I got to just to, sometimes people, I don't know if you're an inspiring reporter or whatever. Sometimes you take a chance and you don't realize that people you get to know at each stop, the networking from NFL.com, but it was amazing. And, you put people on a resume, you get to, just to pick their brains and learn from them. That's what I made sure when I was there for 2 years, I made sure to listen, learn, and kind of just get to know people.
Very cool, man. I mean, you kind of answered my next question. I was going to ask you if you've always been with the Chargers, but clearly not after that answer you gave there, So yeah, that's definitely good stuff there. I mean, from the Raiders to the Chargers, who's your favorite team in the NFL? Like being a reporter or writer or anything like that in general, who's your favorite team in the NFL?
Well, it's tough as a reporter. I can't really root or pick a side anymore. You know, you kind of that's kind of the bad thing. You kind of give up the fandom, you know. But I'm, you know, after a couple of years of doing this, you kind of get over it. I mean, I don't care who wins or who loses. You know, I do care about my fantasy football team. I am checking. You know, I am guilty to check during halftime, or you know, I'm on deadline to write a story, but I still got to check my roster on fantasy to make sure I'm doing okay. So maybe I'm more of like a fan of the players now. Like, you know, of course I love watching Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and all these, you know, great wide receivers and defensive players. You know, I'm more of a player guy, but if I got to give you a team when I was a kid, mine's kind of random. I was a Minnesota Vikings fan. And I'm guessing you might be a Lions fan being from Detroit. So I don't know. That's a good thing for me to say right now. But there was no LA football team when I was growing up. The Raiders were not here. I mean, they were gone. The Rams were gone. And then, you know, we have two teams now, and thankfully because I have a job because of that. But when I was growing up, there was no teams. And my favorite, again, going back to players, my favorite player was Randy Moss. I love watching him play. I used to go out on the back, in my backyard, and just run straight routes and go deep and catch jump balls. That's all I was good at. I couldn't play football because I couldn't run a route, but I could go straight and be fast. And that's how I kind of became a football fan.
Hey, who wouldn't want to be Randy Moss at that time, right?
Yeah. He was a freak.
So, I mean, me, I'm not a Lions fan. So okay. you're same with Vikings. I've always actually, even I've born and raised here just north of Detroit, and I've always been a 49ers fan.
Wow, that's far away because they were winning a lot back in the day.
Yeah, I mean, when I started getting into football, you know, that was, you know, the end of the Montana era, and then you rolled into Young and just, and, you know, everything that happened there. And then, you know, they had a rough time, and then they picked back up, and here they are again today, even before this, when Harbaugh was there and all that. So, you know, I've been up and down the road with them, that's for sure.
That's good to have.
Diving more into this, one of the more important things that I want to ask you is how has this year been for you in navigating through this difficult offseason? I mean, it's uncharted waters for everybody in general. Has your approach been different? And if so, how?
Yeah, it's weird. Like where I'm talking to from my room, that's how I've been getting the work done the last year or since March. It's just been weird because, again, like I was mentioning how, you know, when I was covering high school sports, I love getting to know new people and getting hearing their stories. And you don't really get that same feel from a Zoom call or a phoner. So that's been a big adjustment, and it's been a lot of wait and see. You know, the good thing, you know, I don't want to call it a good thing, but, you know, it worked out for the NFL because, you know, all I missed out was OTAs at first, you know, the offseason program, something like that. Who cares? There's nothing to report here, but I still got to be out here to kind of, you know, at least kind of check out the landscape. So, you know, I guess you're kind of going in a little blind for training camp because we're having these conversations with Anthony and Lynn, and I'm like, so who's good and who's not? Who's going to win a roster spot? And like, and he's not lying to me. He doesn't know because there's nothing been going on. Nothing, you know, you can't say anything and hype up a guy when you've never seen him play. So that's kind of been an adjustment. And we're kind of now at the period where my editors want me to do a daily story of the Chargers. And I'm like, it's hard because there's not much going on. We're getting some Zoom access here and there. And I hate that we're all having the same Zoom interview. So we're all kind of, all the reporters are kind of writing the same story. So that's kind of been the hard part to kind of manage it. But I so far it's been pretty simple and straightforward. But I think starting Monday when the pads come out, finally the reporters, the media and myself, we could be out there and watch a live practice. That's when you kind of get a sense of how chaotic and how weird it's going to be. And the strange part, I think football is about a month away, and I still haven't made up my mind if I'm going to travel with the team. Usually I travel to every game. I haven't booked anything. I don't know how that's going to work out. Am I just going to be at home games? Will I get to be at week one against the Bengals, Joe Burrow and Tyrod Taylor, or Justin Herbert going at it? I still haven't decided, and I guess I'll figure it out, you know, once I'm out there in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that's I can't even imagine, man, because, yeah, you really have everything mapped out throughout the course of, and, you know, basically, depending on how the team does, going into February, right? So, yeah, that's kind of crazy and just a different thing. And, you know, just talking about your point where you're saying it's kind of a bummer that you're all on the same Zoom call, because that's what I was going to, you know, ask. With all the different beat writers around, you know, obviously there's a handful of you. You know, is what makes your perspective stand out? You know, what are the things that you try to do completely different that separates you from the other people out there?
During the off season, I had to be a little more aggressive with getting people to talk to me on the phone, getting away from the Zoom calls and you know, getting a different type of coverage. I did a story that was pretty popular, with, you know, the focus, you know, the focus was on the Chargers to draft a quarterback of the future. The focus was on Phillip Rivers walking away. And I'm like, nobody's talking to Tyrod Taylor. This is a guy who's going to be the starter. So, you know, I just kind of went about a way to make sure you want to talk to him on the phone. You want to get your story out there. You want to talk about how you're being overlooked. And he agreed to it. So that's kind of the thing. You have to be, you know, as a reporter, you have to be a little more aggressive with the phone calls and talking to people. Because the good thing about the Chargers, though, when I was covering them in a regular year, there's not too much media competition or access. You get to go into a locker room and it's pretty much, you know, wide open. You want to go talk to a guy, you don't have to, you know, you don't have to deal with a scrum or a huddle because, you know, so-and-so players are, they're just bombarded with media. So that was kind of the good thing about the Chargers. But now we're all together and you don't want to give away your secrets too much of asking, you know, a certain question. And sometimes you kind of look, you know, look a little dumb because you're asking players, you know, a certain question like, hey, so, you know, what did you eat for the offseason? And people think that's a stupid question, but sometimes you get a great response from these stupid questions, but you want to do that in your privacy. And then you want to do it on your own feature story, and to ask those questions. So it's kind of, there's some good and bad there, but I guess at the same time, they kind of make it easier for you that all you got to do is go to your living room and get on the computer and just talk to the guy from there. So that's kind of the upside, but the other stuff is just a little tricky.
Yeah, I can only imagine, man. I can only imagine. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm really kind of, I'm wondering if the season's going to start on time, and I'm wondering if it's going to be delayed. And I know there's actually been some good feedback with the amount of testing that they've done, and they've extended it in here. I believe it was September 5th, and then they'll kind of go from there. As far as how they're going to adjust. And there are certain things in the CBA that I know that they have adjusted to, you know, depending on how this season goes, where they can actually move the draft to, where they're willing to move the draft to, both the NFL and the NFLPA, so on and so forth. You know, what are your thoughts on actually having a season? Is it going to be, do you think we're going to get a full season in, a shortened season? What are you thinking?
I think because I'm covering the Chargers, I feel a little more better in that, you know. That sounds kind of weird to say, but it's crazy that we've gone about 3 weeks, which doesn't sound like a long time, but on the Chargers standpoint, it's been pretty much smooth sailing. They haven't had, I'll change my words in a little bit because I did see something on Hard Knocks with Anthony Lynn testing positive for the coronavirus there. But before that, no player has tested positive since training camp testing has started. No player has been the COVID-19 reserve list, this new made up list for the 2020 pandemic. No players are on that. Nobody opted out from the Chargers because of coronavirus concerns. So before Anthony Lynn revealed on Hard Knocks that he had coronavirus, it was pretty much smooth for a good amount of months. And even right now talking to you, I keep waiting for them to put somebody on the COVID list because it's kind of just bound to happen because all these teams are doing it. But the Chargers have not done it yet. So maybe just being with that team, sometimes I forget about it, that there's a pandemic because it kind of, besides the Zoom calls, it feels like, you know, I'm not writing about it too much besides Anthony Lynn revealing it on Hard Knocks, but it's been smooth. But I just going away from just the Chargers, I kind of feel like they're, so far it's been okay for the league as a whole. You mentioned the numbers of the testing is pretty low. It seems like when somebody has it, they're very good at containing it. You don't really see these outbreaks from, in baseball with the Miami Marlins and the St. Louis Cardinals. But again, with the football, they're not really allowed to say who has it or is just somebody who may have it and they just want to be safe. So maybe that's kind of a way to do it to keep it, you know, hush, hush. But I think right now, if you're asking me today, I think they are going to get it off in time. Maybe after a week or one or week two of games and people are testing positive, maybe they might postpone it. But I think for right now, I think so far so good. And why not try it out on the regular schedule?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting because, I mean, you look at what the NBA has done. You look at what the NHL has done. Major League Baseball, for the sport that it is, and you still have some guys that, you know, have close contact, whatever. It's an outside sport. The NHL, you have guys in close contact, so on and so forth. So it gives me a little bit of hope. And, you know, the numbers that they have, and there's different things I know that are going on as far as protocol across the league. But it seems like every team is different with things that they're doing. And I know you said that you guys, it's this coming Monday. that's going to be open to you guys coming in there? Because I was going to ask you, you know, if you had seen, been able to see any of the implemented protocol, hear anything, you know, are there changes in the weight room, the locker room, et cetera, things that they're doing when they, you know, come into the facility, so on and so forth. Have you been exposed to any of that at all?
Nothing yet. Everything has been from this room where I'm talking to you from. But you kind of, I kind of got a sense from it because I'm doing a couple of Hard Knock stories. I heard that so far that Anthony Allen, he's hosting all his meetings via Zoom on a, you know, video communications. On the Rams side, sometimes Sean McVay, he's getting the people, you know, together indoors. So I think the Chargers are being a little more cautious when it comes to that. They moved their weight facility to outdoors. They're going to move, I guess, once the pads come out, they're going to move to a more spacious field besides their facility. This kind of, it's a little smaller one compared to the other ones in the league. So they're going to move to kind of be a little more spread out, which is not too far away from where they train. But they are taking some precaution measures. I don't think they're allowing more than six people at a time in the building. They're breaking up the positional groups, and more Zoom chats. I think Anthony Lynn fell in love with the Zoom. He's telling me, you know, why haven't we done this more often in years past? Like he says, I want to talk to you in person. I feel like I get to know you a little better. But, you know, sometimes he forgets that he hasn't seen some of these guys in months. And when he went out to training camp, he's like, oh, we've been talking on Zoom. It felt like we've been talking forever, like a regular day. So he likes it. He might incorporate it for the future. But they are taking some good precautions, and so far they've been okay with it.
That's good. I mean, obviously, you know, with the results outside of head coach himself. I mean, obviously, they've been in pretty good shape, right?
So, yeah. And even to Anthony Allen, I think he was probably being safe. And sometimes you never know how you get it. He said he was watching a golf event, and a golfer was explaining the symptoms that he had when he tested positive. And Anthony Allen was like, whoa, I kind of feel the same thing. And out of precaution, he just got tested. And sure enough, he had it. So sometimes you got to get lucky. Because you never know when this thing could get you.
Right, exactly. There really is. You have no way. I mean, it's just like, you know, for every parent out there that's, you know, trying to deal with what their kids are going to, you know, deal with going back to school and so on and so forth. And, you know, the amount of people that are out there that don't even know because they're asymptomatic, or, you know, even if they're not asymptomatic, their body can just handle it. And it's always kind of like a thought in the back of my head with professional athletes. I mean, these are well-conditioned individuals, and, you know, it's just the amount of tests that even came out, whether they were actually positive or they turned out to be false positive or whatever, is a lot of these guys are like, yeah, I feel fine. Like, I don't know. I didn't even know I had it, you know? So speaking of the players, What's the feel around there? You know, this is life after Rivers and Gordon. I mean, Rivers has been there forever. Melvin Gordon's been around a little while. I mean, those are two key pieces that are gone. You know, what's the feel around there?
You know, you would think it'll feel a little different because, you know, Philip Rivers was there for so long, since 2004, and such a, you know, a big identity of the team and such a great leader. But I think the Chargers as a whole, they're kind of excited. It's kind of like a new era, something fresh, something brand new. And I don't think it's a knock on Philip Rivers that they're going into a brand new stadium at SoFi Stadium. They won't have any fans there. It seems like they haven't officially decided, but I think, you know, it's going to be an empty crowd there. But they're excited about going into a bigger facility, which is good, because imagine having, you know, a game day experience at the soccer stadium they were at a year ago, which holds like 30,000 people. And those locker rooms were cramped. They're, man, for post-game interviews going into that soccer stadium locker room, it was chaos. It was too small, too crowded, and I can only imagine how it would be during a pandemic. So I think they're excited about getting a new locker room, a new place to play, a lot of fresh faces. You added guys like Chris Harris Jr. and Linval Joseph and Brian Bulaga. You drafted Justin Herbert and Kenneth Murray. It's just a new feel, a new era, on the horizon for the Chargers. And I think they're all pretty excited about it.
No, that's very cool. And, you know, I didn't even really think about it until you were just talking about that right there, going into a new stadium and all that. So, yeah, it's almost like a fresh start for the entire organization for the most part. I mean, obviously you still have some key players and you still have Coach Lynn there and all that. So, I mean, what are some of the hot topics coming from the team right now? Like, what's being talked about the most?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. I think you want to talk about the quarterback competition between Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert, but it doesn't feel at like a true quarterback competition, because I think Anthony Lynn is very convinced that it's going to be Tyrod Taylor starting week one. He wants a veteran there. People are very excited to see Justin Herbert, especially what he did on Hard Knocks during that throwing session where he could have missed, but that's just a throwing session.
Right.
So you got to pump on the brakes a little bit. But I think it's going to be Tyrod Taylor, and everybody kind of feels that's kind of the way it is. I think maybe for players that are going to play, I think for the Chargers, I think they're very excited about the defense as a whole. Like I mentioned, they added Chris Harris and Linval, and they drafted Kenneth Murray. And you look at that roster, I know it's all training camp hype right now, but if you're looking on paper, this team is very, very loaded, very deep at defense. And I found myself saying that a year ago too, and I was fooled, and they didn't do so well. They were pretty bad in a bunch of categories, but they always had the talent. They just had a lot of injuries. They lost 9-1 score losses. But now you get a healthy Derwin James back that didn't help a year ago. So I think now if
everybody's like Derwin James.
Yeah, he's such a great player. And I think just having him healthy gets people more energized and excited. I think that's what it is, just having Derwin Day and then you added the pieces. I think this defense wants to show that they could contend with the Chiefs. I think that's what they're most excited about, is the defense.
Well, they definitely have the edge too. I mean, with Ingram and Bosa too. I mean, that defense, They're definitely a lot better. There's no doubt about that. And that was one of the things I was going to ask you. We'll come back to the offense in a second, but I was just going to say, with all the changes on offense and you have the uncertainties there, I mean, you know, we saw what we saw out of Eckler last year. I know the biggest thing right now with everybody is he going to be able to, you know, kind of take that lead role, but you still have Justin Jackson. I honestly think Joshua Kelly was brought in to be the hammer. And I think ultimately he'll be the number two running back on that team. Personally, but with everything that's gone on the offensive side of the ball, with what they've done on defense, you think that defense is going to be able to keep them in some games?
I think so. You know, like I mentioned, I was fooled a year ago, but that was because I was injuries. And you mentioned, you know, how good Derwin James is, and everybody's on the field. And also, you know, it feels like there's a lot of pressure on the defensive coordinator Gus Bradley. He's kind of known for running this safe approach, cover three. And Anthony Lynn, I think he was not happy a year ago when there was no takeaways, there was no sacks, not enough blitzing. He's now forcing Gus Bradley to get aggressive. He wants to see those numbers increase. And of course, Gus Bradley has to oblige. But I think Gus Bradley also was waiting for Derwin James to come back. Now that he has Derwin and he has more key pieces to play around and play these six DBs that he's known for doing with Chris Harris and Desmond King, and Casey Hayward and all these guys, I think now Gus Bradley, with the aggression that he's feeling pressure on from Anthony Lynn, this could be a special unit, I think.
Oh, he should be able to. I mean, just what they have across the front and what they've done to add to that secondary. I mean, a good front will make a secondary better, and a good secondary will make a front better. And I think you have a good mixture between the two. So, you know, the offensive coordinators are definitely going to have to scheme properly as long as that entire defense is healthy. So it'll definitely be, especially in that division, it'll definitely be fun to see how that all plays out. But going back to the offensive side of the ball, I mean, you know, we kind of talked about the quarterback situation a little bit, and I agree with you. I think that Tyrod Taylor is going to be the guy to start, and probably depending on how the season goes, is if and when we'll see Herbert. But I think Tyrod also, in his mind, probably thinks that, I mean, he's going to play for the job, you know, obviously to be the starter and hold on to as much as he can. But I'm sure he's also in a position that he understands why they drafted Herbert. And then you look at the running back position, which we just, you know, I just mentioned a second ago, and you can touch base on that too. But then you look at the wide receivers, you have Keenan Allen, you have Mike Williams, and it looks like they have Joe Reed already listed as the third option, the rookie out of Virginia there. And then who knows what we're going to get out of Hunter Henry this year. So, I mean, from the offensive side of the ball, you know, what are you seeing? Are you hearing anything early, or you think you're going to have a better feel once you're actually on the field next week?
Yeah, I took a stab at the depth charts, I guess my projections of what I think I'm going to see out there. But yeah, I think once I get out there, you know, I'm going to get a better feel. But I think I feel good about the Joe Reed prediction. I think Joe Reed's going to be a starter, you know, be the number three behind Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And I really like KJ Hill, the other rookie they drafted, because, you know, when you're a receiver who knows how to get open and you can run routes, you're going to crack a lineup or a rotation. But I just feel like the Chargers already kind of have what he does. That, you know, Keenan Allen is so good at getting open Austin Eckler gets open. If you're talking about a short passing game, you already have Hunter Henry there to kind of, you know, give the ball to. So you have that. You need guys to stretch the field, speedsters, trick play kind of guys. Like everybody's trying to be the 49ers and the Ravens with these zone reads and trickeration and RPOs. They're kind of missing that. The Chargers, that's what they're going to do with Tyrod Taylor. You need a guy who kind of, you know, motion to the other side and kind of create all these kind of trickeration and deception. And I think Joe Reed could do that for you. He was a All-American kickoff returner at Virginia. He's shown to be able to play from the backfield. He's shown to be a deep threat. I know the speed wasn't as blazing as you want it to be at when you're running the 40 at the combine, but it was up there, you know, with some of the fastest guys. And he proved in college he could get up there. And I think I asked him the question. I said, hey, I know the speed's not there, but can you be a deep threat? And he's like, hey, I didn't drop any passes when they went deep to me. And I was like, okay. He's a very confident guy. So I think just what he brings to the table, and he just fills a role. And I think when you can fill a role, that kind of gives you the advantage. And that's why I feel like he's going to be number three.
No, that's good to hear, because, yeah, there's always been, like, until Mike Williams came along, there was like that, just a mixture of that, you know, wide receiver too. And, you know, before Keenan Allen, there was Vincent Jackson, right? And then there was whoever else. And I know there was a lot of upside for Tyrell Williams. And I know there's some truthers out there still with him being over with the Raiders now, and just, you know, the brief success that he had with the Chargers. But yeah, I mean, Keenan Allen's definitely hands down one of the best route runners in the entire game. He's definitely top 3 to 5 in separation per route ran and all that stuff. The guy is legit. Mike Williams, just obviously a big physical dude, but you're right. I mean, they need a guy that, you know, just get down the sideline and go. And going back to the RPO option and running all the trickery and stuff like that, Tyrod Taylor is good for that. You know, he's a guy that can create when a play breaks down, and obviously, you know, he can move and whatnot. And it makes me wonder what they're really going to utilize Herbert for, you know, what their plan is for him, because it really wasn't one of my favorite landing spots for Herbert, to be honest with you. I think he was going to be one of those guys that were going to be kind of like scheme dependent. As you were talking there, that it just kind of clicked in my head, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why they draft him. It's his ability to move and his arm and so on and so forth. And every rookie's going to struggle. They're going to have their problems. And even into year two, but I mean, you look at a guy like Josh Allen over in Buffalo, he took a lot of hate going into his rookie year. And he still has some improvements to make with the ball and all that stuff. But in his way and how the scheme is and all that stuff, he's been productive. So it makes me wonder if that's what's going to end up happening with Herbert.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's all about where you land and will a team adjust to your strengths and scheme around you. And you see it. There were so many question marks about Lamar Jackson a couple of years ago. I think he was the last pick in the first round. And the Baltimore Ravens went all in to scheme around him. And I think that's what the Chargers are already doing or were planning on doing. And that's why I think they're so excited that they – and also I think, you know, that's why, you know, I kept pushing for Tua Tagovailoa because I thought he was just ready to go. They got career defenses. He's accurate. It's kind of like a surefire thing. But the Chargers did not trade up. I kept pushing, you know, my draft coverage, you got to trade up. You got to get this guy. You got to leap ahead of the Miami Dolphins. But I think the Chargers the whole time were just thinking scheme fit. What fits us? And they probably had a good sense that, you know, Justin Herbert feels that, and he's going to be there at number six. So let's just, you know, stand pat. And I bet when the Miami Dolphins, you know, took Tua, they probably were doing – they were having a celebration, having fist pumps on Zoom, because they probably wanted Justin Herbert all along. And you brought the whole scheme thing, you know, just watching Anthony Lynn on Hard Knocks and just fold his arms and being so amazed at what he's doing, because Justin Herbert, he has all the tools. It's just, you know, can you put it together on the next level when it comes to reading defenses, you know, working a little faster, not overthinking it. But I think if you're getting coached, like guys like Pep Hamilton, who he was coaching Andrew Luck. You got Shane Steichen in there, who was a quarterback coach for a long time and worked around Phillip Rivers. You have the coaches there around. And then you mentioned all the weapons that they have. And the offensive line is a little shaky, but the right side with Brian Bulaga, Trey Turner, and Mike Pouncey is very good. I think you're set up for success. Now, you don't want to rush Justin Herbert. That's why you got Tyrod Taylor. And I know people are saying, if Tyrod Taylor loses, you will see Justin Herbert much sooner. That might not be a good thing for everybody. If Tyrod Taylor is doing well in this offense, this scheme, sometimes when you have a great scheme, now you, when your quarterback, your young guy is ready to go, you plug him in there and you know the scheme works. So he's set up for success. Now you know it's on the quarterback because the scheme works. So if Tyrod's looking like a rejuvenated Tyrod Taylor, you know, kudos to Anthony Lynn and the scheme there, because you kind of saw what Andy Reid did with the Chiefs. You know, he had a scheme that worked with Alex Smith, but Alex Smith wasn't the guy to kind of get to the next level. Now when you bring in Patrick Mahomes, the scheme works, and now you have the talent of Patrick Mahomes, and it just went to a whole nother level. So I think that's probably what the Chargers are thinking. Sorry for the long answer, but I think they're covering all the bases to kind of make sure that Justin Herbert's in the right spot for, you know, year two, year three, year four.
Yeah, no need to be sorry, man. That's all good stuff right there. And it makes sense. It really does. And we did, like I said before, we did see success with Tyrod Taylor. I mean, and in Buffalo, of all places. And he didn't really have the kind of weapons that he has with the Chargers. So, you know, we'll see what happens. And we'll see if Anthony Lynn's like an evil genius or something, you know. So,
you know, you know, sorry, I was going to say, I think he's eager to show that he knows how to be a guy who's X's and O's. People keep just crediting him for leadership, but they always overlook the strategizing, the game plan. So I think maybe he wants to kind of prove people wrong.
I've actually been seeing a lot of praise about him across the board. Even like here in Detroit, some of our local radio shows have kind of kept an eye on what he's doing out there.
Wow.
Yeah, they've kind of sang his praises a little bit and like what he's doing and whatnot.
Good to know. He has 1 year left on his contract, so I think that's why people are kind of, you know, putting him on the list now.
Well, it'd be nice to in this uncertain time if he could put a good season in front of it, you know. But that will also say a lot about himself, how he prepares his team, and so on and so forth. So it could be, you know, kind of like a silver lining for him, right?
Yeah.
So one last thing, though, on both sides of the ball. Are there any players that you're seeing that could be like a huge difference maker that people just may not think about? I mean, we kind of talked about Joe Reed a little bit, but is there anybody else you're seeing?
You know, I don't want to, I guess, you know, on my projected depth chart, I have Joshua Kelly number two right now. And I got the sense that you kind of feel like he's going to be the number two also to Austin Eckler. And I still kind of feel that way too, because he brings a different element of being that power running back. Short yard situation, you know, get you that 1 year touchdown that Melvin Gordon was so good at. But just listening to the coaching staff and the players, they keep raving about Justin Jackson. I'm like, should I change my pick now? I know it's all hype in training camp, so I'm going to be looking for it on practice. But the weird thing is, I know Justin Jackson could play. It's just he can't stay healthy. If he's healthy, I think he could be, you know, out there for a big season, because I know it's small portions, but you look at the numbers, and I like to kind of look at previews with these analytics and stuff like that. And Justin Jackson keeps coming up. When it comes to small sample size, his numbers are outstanding. And I've seen it. I know what I'm going to get with Justin Jackson. So I think I might change my mind. So maybe ignore Joshua Kelly for number two on my projection for right now. But if you have one of those deep dive fantasy football leagues, you know, take a flyer on Justin Jackson. You know for sure he could play. Just got to roll the dice and stay healthy. And you mentioned on defense, I guess, you know, I want to say the easy answer, Derwin James, healthy Derwin James, but we kind of know he's going to be probably the same all pro from 2018. But I'm very curious to see how Chris Harris Jr. and Desmond King kind of coexist, because they've both been all pros as slot cornerback. You know, you can't really have two slot cornerbacks nowadays. So it might be a little competition to see who gets that spot. So I guess, you know, you being a Detroit guy, Desmond King is a Detroit native going into the final year of his rookie contract. He wants to get paid. And maybe he peaked a little early by being an all-pro in 2018, but it's kind of a make or break year for him, because they already have Chris Harris there potentially being the replacement. But if Desmond King balls out, becomes an all-pro again, he might get paid somewhere else, or he might stay with the Chargers and get paid here.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, though, with the secondary, you're never deep enough. You know, so yeah,
when you're playing Patrick Mahomes twice a year, you're right.
Right, exactly. And I mean, Miami kind of did the same thing. You know, they paid up heavy on their secondary a little bit in the off season. So, you know, it's just you can never be deep enough. So, well, Gil, I really appreciate your time, but what I'm going to do for you is I want to open the floor up to you, man. I mean, anything that you want to plug? You know, you talked about looking at your fantasy teams earlier while you're doing your thing, you know, and who are some of your favorite players? I mean, floor's open, man. Anything you want to plug?
So players, or can I plug some of my stories or coming up stories?
Best stories, whatever you want, man. It's all you.
Okay. You know, go check out that depth chart. I know I might have, you know, said I was wrong on Joshua Kelly there, but I have that on Orange County Register, Backspace Chargers. You'll find all my stories there and you get to see the depth chart. But I've been doing a lot of Hard Knocks stories, recaps, and I'm very excited for the one I'm working on. It's kind of a behind the scenes story of episode one. If you remember, the rookie Darius Brattle, he was the one who, was very excited about, Justin Herbert throwing the balls. He said, I like his balls. And then, the teammate kind of had a joke. So I spoke to him and I said, hey, are you kind of embarrassed to be in this situation? And, he loved it. He was very outgoing. So I want to kind of do like a nuggets there. And I'm hoping I'll talk to some HBO directors and kind of give me a breakdown of how it is to, you know, film during a pandemic. But other than that, no, just keep following my stories on Twitter. I appreciate everybody that reads. You know, I know it's kind of hard nowadays because there's so much content out there and people kind of forget the newspaper. So I appreciate any clicks or views or subscriptions or just a follow on Twitter would be great.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. So, again, yeah, this has been really cool. It's a unique perspective to be able to talk to somebody who's, you know, they're in it. You know, you're in the thick of it all. So you're definitely seeing a lot more than, you know, us, you know, saturated world of fantasy analysts and all that stuff. And, you know, we're looking at stats and whatnot, but it's just nice to be able to talk scheme, you know, with people that are out there and they're seeing it and not just on Sundays. Right. So again, I really appreciate your time.
And thank you for being, I guess, you know, so open with me, or I guess allowing me to be open, because you asked a lot of questions from the start, you know, how I got into a beat writer. And it's kind of cool to look back to see where you started, and you make scheme talk not sound as boring. So I appreciate you with all the good questions.
Not a problem, man. It was my pleasure. But yeah, I mean, it's always good to reminisce about stuff like that. So before we head out, go visit our Patreon at either patreon.com/sleeperwire, or you can also find it if you go to sleeperwire.com/donate. You can go there. There's different levels of content. We're putting articles out there that are open to the public. We got some new guys in the industry that are actually putting out some pretty good stuff. So shout out to those guys. Appreciate their work. And again, Gil, you know, I don't know. I'm sure your guys' schedule is kind of crazy throughout the season, but, you know, hopefully at some point throughout the year here, we can sit down again and talk about more what's going on over there in LA.
Yeah, hopefully there's a season, but I'll be glad to.
Absolutely. All right. So the next time you all hear my voice, stay safe. And